Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Amy versus USA. Thank you for joining us today. This is Mary Neal, and we really appreciate your joining us on this radio broadcast. Amy stands for Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill is seeking restitution for our neglected, mistreated, tortured, or killed mentally ill persons or substance abusers, as well as their victims. You can call to speak on air at 347-857-3293. Join the Claimants Conferences on the first Saturday and Sunday of each month and allow our international human rights lawyer to review your case for possible inclusion of our planned action in the international court in 2015. Have you or a close relative or next friend experienced any of these circumstances as a result of mental illness? I'm going to name 10 circumstances, and that is not to exclude other issues, but these are the main 10. Long-term homelessness, medical neglect, psychiatric neglect or rejection for alcohol, drug treatment, brutality, lunacy arrest, denial of a fair, speedy trial with adequate defense attorney appointed, that's a Sixth Amendment right, imprisonment, long-term solitary confinement, torture as a jail or prison inmate, or wrongful death, including police violence and state executions. Have you or any of your mentally ill relatives or your next friend experienced any of those circumstances as a result of mental illness? The 10 circumstances listed are common outcomes for poor or middle-class Americans with mental disabilities and substance abuse problems. Mentally challenged and drug, alcohol-addicted people are often victims of crimes against humanity, which are perpetuated or ignored by the government. Their human rights must therefore be protected by the United Nations. Discriminating against people for reason of their health status and disabilities violates both the U.S. Constitution and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. You are invited to learn more about Amy versus USA at Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill blog, and you can reach that online by simply Googling that name. Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill blog is at http://amy-humanrights.blogspot.com. As I said, those are 10 very common outcomes for people with acute mental illness in America. They are ordinarily homeless, imprisoned, or killed. They are ordinarily subjected to one of those circumstances: homelessness, incarceration, and death. Surely, in the 21st century, we must move beyond 14th century methods for containing containing rather than treating mental illness. We have some awesome psychotropic drug therapies available. We have counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists who can help people with acute mental illness rejoin society and become wholesome, have wholesome lives. But so many people are denied access to treatment for their mental illness until after they prove to be a danger to themselves and others, at which point they still are denied mental hospitalization usually, except to get trial ready. This system that we have now uses mentally ill people in America to earn prison profits. And that is why so often our people with severe mental illness are denied treatment until they prove, usually through violence or some other crime, that they are a danger to self and others. We object to that at Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We also object to the many deaths that happen while people are undergoing lunacy arrests, and also the wrongful deaths that occur to prisoners who are mentally ill once they are incarcerated. Usually these deaths encounter no righteousness in courts. Oftentimes the officers, whether they're police officers or corrections officers, are not charged with any crime in relation to wrongful deaths or brutality. And we feel that that also needs to change. However, Amy versus USA seeks only restitution for the families or the next friends of mentally ill people who have been harmed or who have died. And we will recommend to the United Nations that it puts forth guidelines that will help make its member state, the United States of America, more cognizant about the human rights violations that occur regularly to mentally ill people, and that the United Nations also make certain recommendations which will make the USA a safer environment for people with mental disabilities. And so we want to thank you for joining us here. This is the first Amy versus USA broadcast of 2015. We thank you for joining us this morning. It is a little after 9 on the West Coast, and it's a little after noon on the East Coast. And we want to wish everyone a very happy new year. That's under the sound of my voice. I want to let you hear now a beautiful tape by Nina Simone, who was herself a mental health patient while she lived. Nina Simone, it was revealed that she suffered from bipolar disorder and took medication for that condition every day. That is revealed in her biography after she died. So here's Nina Simone singing, "I Wish That I Knew What It Was Like to Be Free."
I wish chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart.
Nina Simone singing, I Wish That I Knew How It Feels to Be Free. And as I said to you, Nina Simone was a very famous musician. She both composed music and sang beautifully. And she was a very big headline singer during the Civil Rights Movement. And she's singing, I Wish That I Knew How It Feels to Be Free. And I think that in her case, when she sang that song, she was not only singing about freedom in the sense of the struggle for human and civil rights, but also freedom from her mental illness, because Nina Simone was bipolar. And people who have bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and other mental illnesses are oftentimes constrained and they're restrained and oppressed in America. As a matter of fact, 1.25 million of America's 2.3 million prisoners this morning are mentally ill people, over half of the people who are incarcerated, as well as over half of the people who endure police violence, including wrongful deaths and righteous deaths. There are righteous deaths that happen, but feel that more safety measures could be used, even in some of those deaths that are ruled justified. Even if an individual who's mentally ill has a knife or some other object that could be used for deadly force, we feel that 3 and 4 strong police officers should be able to restrain the mentally ill person or incapacitate the mentally ill person and take them into custody without lethal force. Our police officers are equipped with tasers. Also, there are other methods that can be used to restrain a person, even if they have an instrument that could be used for deadly force, like a small knife. So these are the situations that we want to contest and that we do contest. In addition to our monthly meetings, claimants meetings, for assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill versus USA, we have weekly radio shows here at Blog Talk Radio, assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And that's midnight on the East Coast. And you're welcome to call in there and voice your opinions and air your circumstances regarding mentally ill relatives, friends, or yourself. We have here on the line our administrative assistant for assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill, I believe. However, it could be someone else. 6994, how are you today? 6994?
I'm here. Can you hear me, Miss Mary?
I can barely hear you today, Joanna. Thank you for calling.
Okay, I'm not sure what's going on. I've got my volume on my same phone that we always talk on and talk via the conference line and the Blog Talk Radio line. So I've got the volume turned all the way up. I'm well today. Thank you for sharing the Nina Simone song. I called
Oh,
regular...
you're welcome. I hope the audience enjoyed it because, as I was saying, Nina Simone, it was revealed in her biography, which was written after her death, that she was bipolar and that she took medication to control her mental illness every day. So very many people with mental illness, we know, once they get stabilized, they tend to feel like they're as well as anyone else and that they no longer need their medication. And that's one of the primary problems, Joanna, is that stabilized people may feel like they no longer need their medications and they discontinue taking it, and then they have relapses that put them back in trouble. We talked to a lady here at Human Rights Demand Station last week, and this week actually, and she told us about her son who discontinued his medication. We're going to have a woman on the show on Monday at 3 p.m. here at this same telephone number for Human Rights Demand, who will tell us about her son who discontinued his psychotropic drugs. After 4 years, he was able to work for 4 years. He was able to lead a normal, so-called normal life, 4 years, and provide for his own needs. But then he decided one day that he was well, and that he was stabilized. He felt normal. He did everything that so-called normal people do, and he no longer needed his psychotropic drugs. And at that point, he started spiraling out of control. And so that is what happens, and that is what AOT programs will prevent. AOT programs, that's the acronym for Assisted Outpatient Treatment Programs, and they provide subsistence assistance if needed, and also they mandate that individuals with severe mental illness stay on their treatment program. So I believe that you have some information about AOT programs for us. Is that right?
I just a little bit of research on that. In regard to, and my feeling remains the same, which is it seems like you've always been the most prepared on these topics, and that in your discussion of the different situations, I'll call them situations, not options, but that because some of them don't seem to be really great options or for the long term, i.e. Just kind of warehousing the mentally ill in prison. But so I say this, that the AOT program seems to be the most compassionate option of choice for what we have. And that was because I feel that way because how you explained everything and the different situations, that this does seem to be the most integrated, where you can get people that have maybe illnesses that prevent them from working or being part of society to being treated and help to work and be more functioning part of society, to where they get a good feeling and the community gets a good feeling, and that they're not having to directly interface with perhaps law enforcement when their communication seems to break down. And law
Absolutely. That's my assessment also.
Yes. Well, I got my assessment from hearing you speak on it, so...
Well, thank you.
It's true, because you had the most information on it. But basically, I think what you're saying is also that that this treatment program does use the medication, that it does use medication and have the medical or psychiatric doctors involved with, you know, giving medications to people. And so if these medications are working for certain patients, then of course you want that option for them, because this is America. We should all choose our option, you know, and have the freedom to choose. So I'm interested to hear on Monday what made the young man, after I think you said 4 years of using this medication, what made him feel that he could just stop the medication. And I'm hoping
he felt perfectly normal is why he stopped his medication. Now, I think that ideally Americans and all people should be able to choose their medical treatment. But people who've already proved themselves to have poor judgment in that area due to their mental illness have forfeited the right to choose, in my opinion. People who are incarcerated or who are released from incarceration, people who are in mental hospitals or who have been released from mental hospitals, I recommend that they be released under AOT programs, and that they have forfeited the right to choose simply because their choosing, their own choices have led them to these circumstances that we want to help them avoid in the future. Because generally speaking, mentally ill people revolve in and out, in and out of prisons. Some of them who have better insurance or lighter complexions revolve in and out of mental hospitals. Sometimes it's terminal. It happens forever. I read about one woman who had been incarcerated over 300 times, this one single woman. So therefore, people who have already proved that they make poor decisions regarding their mental health treatment have forfeited their right to decide whether or not they want treatment, and society must choose for them. In other words, it's like a person who's in the custody of parents who belong to some religion or some sect where they are refused blood transfusions. If you have a child who is in your care, and you're the legal guardian or parent of such a child, and the child is unable under the terms of your religion to accept blood transfusions, if that child suffers from cell anemia and goes into a crisis and needs a blood transfusion in order to live, then Child Protective Services will write the order for the hospital to give that child a blood transfusion, no matter what the parents say about it. Because obviously the doctors want to give the child a transfusion and may even save the child's life or well-being depend upon it. And if the parents belong to some religion where they will not allow a blood transfusion, then social services will step in and sign for that child to have the blood transfusion. In the same way, people who need mental health treatment and don't have the wherewithal to accept it willingly or seek it themselves, they should be, nevertheless, given the psychiatric treatment that they need in order to resume wholesome living as much as possible. So in mental hospitals and in jails throughout this nation and prisons, we have people from absolute geniuses all the way down to your plain Jane and plain Dick. We have people who would be able to live wholesome lives and be our good neighbors if they receive the mental health treatment, regardless of what their mind told them that they need. Their minds may tell them that they don't need mental health treatment when indeed they do. They may suffer from various diseases, including bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and what have you, other diseases, depression, and they really need mental health treatment, but their own minds tell them that they do not. You know, a person who is hallucinating can pass a polygraph examination about their hallucinations. If you ask a person who's hallucinating, are there really green men in the corner behind you? That person would pass the polygraph exam because he really does see the green men. He really does see that. So, these people have such a detachment from reality that it's wrong to expect them to make good treatment decisions for themselves. It would be just as wrong as it would be to let children die because their parents belong to religions that say no medical treatment. We'll use snake doctors. That would be wrong to let children die from simple cases of chicken pox or mumps or whatever they may have because their parents are against medical treatment. It's very irresponsible of society in the 21st century to allow people with extreme mental illness, acute mental illness, to make their own treatment decisions when doctors and even untrained people can see that they're in a mental health crisis. This is what happens on a regular basis. It used to not happen, Joanna. It used to not be that way. Families had a much easier time in having their mentally ill relatives committed to be stabilized and also to enforce treatment than is the case today. Because sometime in the late 60s and early 70s, laws were passed that made it nearly impossible for families and next friends to ascertain treatment for their affected loved ones unless and until person proved to be a danger to self and others. And so often when we read about tragedies involving people with mental illness, we find that this person has a history of diagnosed mental illness as well as other run-ins with police or other hospitalizations. And it should have been easier to get them help than it was. But we read about tragedies often involving people with severe mental illness who were allowed to just let the mental illness run its course until they lay dead or until they were incarcerated long term. And so these are the circumstances that we want to avoid and that could be avoided under assisted outpatient treatment programs. So I agree that people should be able to determine their own treatment if they are people who have full capacity. But so often it has already been proved. We don't have to wait on the proof. It has already been proved that people have a tendency to choose not to be treated for mental illness, especially if they are already in the grips of a mental health crisis. And so this cycle must be broken, and it can be broken with assisted outpatient treatment programs, because outpatient treatment programs remove the choice from people with severe mental illness, particularly those who are leaving the prisons and jails and those who are leaving the mental hospitals. That choice is taken away from them, and it is empowered to the state to make a determination and issue a court order that they must maintain their psychiatric treatment. Therefore, those who have been stabilized in mental hospitals and those who have been stabilized during the term of their incarceration would remain stabilized, possibly throughout their lives. However, we know that mental illness is like any other chronic disease. Regular doctor's visits and actual interface with psychiatrists is necessary in order to avoid mental health crisis. So that is the necessity, and that is what we propound here at Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. That is what 99.9% of the people who are members of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill believe. And also, it is what the families of mentally ill people, people with acute mental illness, believe is necessary. Almost all of them embrace the idea of assisted outpatient treatment programs as being what they would like for their loved ones who have severe mental illness. And they can usually recount for you the times while their family member was revealed to you how wholesome and how completely well that individual seemed as long as they were under treatment. It's rather like a person with a severe heart condition who has irregular heartbeats, say. As long as that person is on his medical treatment program and takes his meds every day, he or she may not have irregular heartbeats, but that is not to say that the person has recovered from that condition. Indeed, when that individual is taken off the medicine that is keeping his heartbeat regular, or if the pacemaker that's in his or her chest is removed, then it could very well be fatal. Because individuals who have been treated with the medicines that keep their heartbeat regular, or who have had their heartbeats regulated by a pacemaker, are probably in more danger of crisis. They're suddenly taken off that than they would have been had they stayed on it. So the situation is, what's good for the people with acute mental illness is not necessarily what they do, because they have a mental disability. And so that is my position on it. And, of course, it's the position of the members of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. These conditions, these circumstances of lack of treatment are the circumstances that result in long-term homelessness, medical neglect, psychiatric neglect or rejection for drug alcohol treatment, brutality, lunacy arrest, denial of fair speedy trials with adequate defense attorneys appointed, imprisonment, long-term solitary confinement, torture as a jail or prison inmate, and wrongful death during lunacy arrest or once an individual is incarcerated. Those circumstances generally could be avoided if individuals who have severe mental illness would simply stay on their psychiatric programs. First of all, be offered psychiatric programs in the first place. I find that a great many families have been to authorities for psychiatric programs for their loved ones. And some people with mental illness have also themselves gone for help, and then they have been rejected for treatment. Another thing is that individuals who are treated for mental illness generally may take weeks of the treatment in order to get stabilized. It may take weeks to get stabilized. And there's a tendency to return people to society before they're actually stabilized. There's a tendency to only keep them 72 hours or, in any case, sometime less than the amount of time it would take for them to actually get psychiatrically stabilized. And then those people are in great danger when they quit taking their medications. And, of course, since they have not been stabilized, they do not recognize fully how important it is to be treated for their mental illness. So these little short hospital stays do very little or nothing to help people who are in crisis. We've had numerous circumstances arise in recent times where people were rejected for hospital to be hospital inpatients, and they have actually died by their own hand. Some of them have been in crisis situations and tried to harm others or did harm others. These circumstances should not be continued, and they can easily be changed. And you might say, well, where is the money for assisted outpatient treatment programs? Where is the money for that? And I want to remind the public that jail is not free. Prison is not free. As a matter of fact, to use an extreme example, New York pays $168,000 per inmate per year. And that's more money than the average American family of four lives on in 4 or 5 years. $168,000 per year per inmate in New York. So, AOT programs would make it possible for individuals to live in their communities with the proper psychiatric treatment and with subsistence assistance, which would be significantly less than $168,000 annually. The problem with the finances is, where does the money go? Rather than the money going to treatment as it should, the money that America spends on mental health care, or used to spend on mental health care, and should spend on treatment for people with acute mental illness, it now goes to prison investors. And that brings us to the problem that many of our prison investors and owners are themselves in the position to be in conflict of interest, because they are our judges, they are our politicians, they get to vote on where the money goes. And so therefore, even though the Justice Department, the U.S. Justice Department, certified AOT programs a few years ago, many cities, many states have not authorized the funds for AOT programs. Therefore, they have not issued a mandate that everybody who leaves prison and who were under mental health treatment in prison would be, it would be a part of their probation to continue that mental health treatment. That is why we don't have a law saying that everyone who is released from mental hospitals will be released under a court order to continue their psychiatric treatment. It's because the monies for AOT programs, which would provide housing and continued mental health treatment and food, that is to say that AOT programs provide subsistence assistance and treatment. Well, they haven't appropriated the money for that. Individual goes out and does something that is a criminal offense, then they will be taken back into incarceration, no matter how much incarceration costs. The money will be spent for incarceration, but it is not used to keep the person stable so that they can live wholesome lives and stay out of incarceration. So whereas everyone has certain rights and should have certain rights, people who have already forfeited their rights are the people who definitely should be court-ordered into AOT programs. For instance, people who are released from jail on probation are not completely free. People who are released from jails and prisons on parole are not completely free. And individuals who are released from mental hospitals still have the underlying disease that they had that caused their mental hospitalization. All of those people should be released only under assisted outpatient treatment programs, to my idea. However, Amy versus USA is not a court action to enforce AOT programs. What we attempt to do at Amy versus USA is to go forward to international court with a lawsuit against the USA for long-term homelessness, medical neglect, psychiatric neglect or rejection for drug alcohol treatment, brutality, denial of fair speedy trials, long-term solitary confinement, and other tortures against a jail and prison inmates and wrongful death. So we're only going for those circumstances that result from the lack of psychiatric treatment, and we're not going for AOT programs, even though we would like for the United Nations to recommend to its member nation to use AOT programs, that is not one of the things that we are specifically going for. We're specifically going for restitution, monetary compensation to people who experienced these circumstances as a result of America's policies regarding mentally ill people. We're going for monetary compensation, for restitution for the mentally ill people who've experienced these things or who have died as a result of some of these circumstances. And these 10 circumstances are listed on the billboard here at Blog Talk Radio, AMA versus USA, January 3rd. And you can read those. And also, there may be other circumstances that were not listed here. So if you feel that you or a family member or a next friend has undergone some of these circumstances that are listed, then you are welcome to join AMA versus USA. And as much as you can call us and also get your records together, because we have an international lawyer to make an assessment as to whether or not your case should be included. So we'll go back to Joanna.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
What are your comments on that, Joanna?
Well, I think you said it. The key points are basically that once they're in that system, they've forfeited their, I guess, rights. And that at that point, they're being warehoused, not just them, but the other inmates are being warehoused. And I did research a program this week where there was a jail, and they had a very almost medieval history, I would call it, where they would, punish the inmates, because at a certain point, I guess the problem becomes you've got people in there that are that have no expectation of ever coming out, and then there are the people that get into the system. So it sounds like it's almost like a pool of people with varying needs, and at this point, their needs are being have to be met secondary to society and basically being warehoused. And if you can imagine, there were some prisoners, I don't know if they were mentally ill or not, but they were told that if they submitted to TB testing, this was at the time not approved drugs or medications for TB, that they could get early release, and they did it. And I don't know if they had mental illness, but at this point it sounds like what you're focusing on is the aspect of you've got to kind of get the illness in control. And when you've got them in a population and you've got only a certain number of people managing, i.e., I don't know how the prison systems work, but the parole, but the officers. And then you've got to kind of keep the mentally ill inmates safe, and possibly from themselves or from other inmates who might get agitated by their behavior, or keep the other inmates safe from them. So, and there are already laws in place that, just as you said, if it's deemed to be an emergency, as opposed to the research showed that there's basically two ways that they get involuntarily treated, and it's if it's an emergency situation or if it's a regular situation, and that they the policy or protocol seems to be that the inmate, they have to explain to the inmate the medication and all of the I forget what it's called, but the rights for the involuntary medication, and that they have to agree. And if they don't, then it can even go to a hearing. So it's just as what you said, that it seems to be the laws have tightened up. And I think
you also hit a key on this, which is that not all inmates have family or community support. So once they're in that system, it just becomes a matter of each person maybe not getting everything that they need, but just some of what they need, and just continuing along because they've got so many lives and inmates on their hands.
Well, absolutely. And every life matters. All lives matter. And so America, it's a matter of priority. And it seems that America prioritizes the prison investors. Prison investors. And the needs of mentally ill people are ignored in this system in order that they will break the law and go to prison and become a prison commodity and help prison investors to make money. Also, before a prison or jail is built by a private company, a given municipality, they have been given guarantees about their capacity. They may have been guaranteed that the municipality will have an influx of inmates to keep that prison or to keep that private jail at 90% or above capacity. So imagine that. Imagine a private jail or private prison being given a guarantee by the municipality, a contract agreement, to keep that prison or that jail, if it's built in their area, at 90% or above capacity. So therefore, whether or not there are crimes happening, they have that contract. And if the crime rate falls, which it has fallen throughout America, violent crimes and other crimes, the rate of crime has fallen throughout America. Therefore, there is even a greater tendency to incarcerate mentally ill people. It's as though these people's rights to freedom have been marginalized to the point that they are deliberately used as prison commodities in order to fulfill municipalities' contracts with private jails and prisons. It's to the point that if people have severe mental illness, it's almost as though we're returning to the 14th century, when those people with those conditions were kept in their families' attics, basements. They were actually chained in dungeons because they were in danger when they went out. They were in danger of being hurt or killed, or they were in danger of actually hurting or killing someone else because there were no psychotropic drugs. But in America, we have psychiatrists, we have psychologists, we have counselors, and we do have very effective psychotropic drugs that control serious mental illness for many, many, in fact, the majority of the people who take them. And yet we have a huge population of people who are denied treatment until they prove through crime, usually through crime, that they are a danger to self and others. And so this is unnecessary, and it is absolutely negligent to have treatment for an illness and refuse services to people who are in the middle class or who are poor in order that they will help municipalities fulfill their contracts to private prisons and jails to keep them 90% or above occupancy. I want to talk to you about a woman who was recently killed by police when her family called the police when she was experiencing a mental health crisis. Her name was Tanisha Anderson. She died in Cleveland 2 months ago because she was physically restrained in a prone position. That's what a coroner ruled on Friday. The mentally ill woman's death in police custody was ruled a homicide. And I'm reading from the Root article. It says that the Associated Press made this report. A heart ailment and bipolar disorder also were found to have contributed to her death, the report says. As a result, the medical examiner in Ohio, where the city of Cleveland is located, ruled the death of Tanisha Anderson, 37, a homicide. The coroner made a finding of sudden death associated with physical restraint in a prone position, while also citing coronary artery disease and Anderson's bipolar disorder. So Cleveland police have said that the death is under investigation and that the two officers involved are on restricted duty. The department is already under heavy scrutiny after the U.S. Department of Justice last month released a report that found excessive use of force and civil rights violations by the Cleveland police. Anderson died on November 12th at a hospital after she was handcuffed and taken into police custody and then lost consciousness while having a mental health episode, the report says. Relatives said that she was schizophrenic and accused the officers of using excessive force against her. So even this victim realized that the police were using excessive force against her. And they killed her in front of her family, right there in front of her house, when police were getting her out of her family's home. She had agreed to go with the officers to get mental health treatment. But then when they handcuffed her and locked her in the back of the police car, according to earlier reports, she decided to get out of the car. And that's when police apparently brutalized her to the point that she suffered and died. When she reached the hospital. So these lunacy arrests are really a place where police officers oftentimes use excessive force against mentally ill people. All the police officers standing around the car probably had tasers, but yet and still she was manhandled and slammed against the ground. It's horrible. These things happen on a continuous basis, and now her death has been ruled homicide, but it's very unlikely in the United States of America that this woman's death will result in any criminal charges against the police officers who killed her. It's very unlikely. Number one, she was a black woman. And number two, she was mentally ill. So mentally ill people and minority status people, oftentimes, if they're killed by police or brutalized, their deaths do not result in criminal charges against the officers. And indeed, some police officers who are involved in deaths of citizens, if you check their file, they oftentimes have numerous episodes where people's rights were violated by those same officers in the past. So that is an unfortunate circumstance. But again, this is Amy versus USA, and we welcome inquiries from people who have mentally ill loved ones who you feel that their rights have been violated. Please give us a ring here at 347-857-3293. Also, listen to our programs on Wednesday nights when individuals from the public call in and tell us about the circumstances that they have or their family members with mental illness have undergone. And that's on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific time. And if you'd like to be our special guest on Human Rights Demand, and this is not only limited to discussions regarding mental illness, but any human rights demand that you would like to issue forward, our telephone number for you to call and seek an appointment to be a guest is my own number, and that is 678-531-0262. That's 678-531-0262. You can also email me, because sometimes I don't get my phone calls or the phone messages that are left on my phone, because the prison industrial complex is very large, very wealthy. It seems very determined not to reform itself. And so the email address where you should also write to me is MaryLovesJustice. That's LOVES, MaryLovesJustice@gmail.com. We have a blog I'd like for you to look at, please, and that is Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. That's D-O-G, Dog Justice for, F-O-R, Mentally Ill, and that's .blogspot.com, Dog Justice for Mentally Ill, .blogspot.com. And when you go to that blog, you will see numerous incidents where people with severe mental illness have been brutalized or killed or rendered homeless long term. I mean, years, some of them. And it's purely because of their mental illness that they are in those circumstances. So, again, if you feel that you or a loved one, whether it's a relative or an ex-friend, have experienced discrimination caused by a common treatable disability, which is mental illness, acute mental illness, then please get in touch with us. You can comment after the articles. There's a comment field at Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. You could also contact me by using that comment field. Be sure to leave an email address so that we can get in touch with you, and especially if you would like to be a part of AMI versus USA. That's Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill versus USA, where we plan to take the USA before international court for abusing the rights or ignoring the rights of people with severe mental illness and their crisis situations, and also people with drug alcohol conditions who were denied treatment, as well as the victims of people with severe mental illness. You personally may have been robbed, you may have been raped, or you may have been physically harmed, or you may have a relative who was killed by someone with untreated mental illness or untreated drug alcohol problems. And in that case, you also qualify to be a claimant in AIMI, that's AMI versus USA. We're taking up to 100 cases regarding mentally ill people, drug alcohol addicts, or their victims to international court this year, 2015. And again, I want to wish everyone a very happy new year. We'll be back on air tomorrow at AMI versus USA at 9 o'clock a.m. Pacific time, 12 o'clock noon Eastern time. We will talk some more regarding this subject, AMI versus USA, in international court. And we're going to international court simply for this, to seek restitution for the people who are mentally ill and whose human rights were violated, and also for their survivors in case they were killed. And so that is why we're going to international court. We hope in the process that certain rules will be put in place for the member state of the United Nations so that protections will be put in place for people with mental illness. And as the United States said to the United Nations during its recent Committee Against Torture questioning, that the United States already has protections for people with severe mental illness. It already has protections for its citizens. However, those protections under the U.S. Constitution seem not to exist for people with severe mental illness. Murder is murder, no matter who is the victim or what diseases the victim had. Nevertheless, the murderers of Darren Rainey, who was dragged into a shower in Dade Correctional Facility and boiled to death under scalding water, those murderers have not been charged with any crime. And so that encourages other corrections officers to go forward and abuse the rights of other inmates who have severe mental illness. So you see, ignoring the responsibility to hold everyone responsible for crimes that are done, even under the color of law, is one of the contributing factors to the disregard of human rights for mentally ill people. And so we would like for you to please come back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific time when we will have another episode of Amy versus USA in international court. Amy versus USA in international court. Don't try to decide yourself whether or not your relative or you yourself qualifies to be a claimant in this lawsuit that's going to international court. Give us a ring and talk to us about it, and also get your records together and let the international lawyer make that decision whether or not your case qualifies to be included. We want to include up to 100 people who have severe mental illness and who have suffered from some of the 10 circumstances that I have recalled to you twice on this program and which are on the face of Blog Talk Radio Show Human Rights Demand for January 3rd, 2015. I want to thank our administrative assistant, who is Joanna. She lives here in Georgia. I want to thank her for joining us on air today and for making it possible for you to connect through the conference call number and also be connected with this broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. Joanna, is there something else you'd like to say to the public before we terminate this conference?
No, ma'am. I think you've covered everything.
Well,
just
thank
only
you.
To stay strong.
Well, I want to thank you again for joining us this morning, Joanna. And I want to let our audience know that there are other volunteer positions here at Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We need volunteers to help with this work. We need volunteers to help notify the public that we are doing this international action. And you can help by simply sharing the link to today's show, and that will be at Blog Talk Radio. And the link for today's show would be very helpful if you would share it and let people know that they are not alone and dealing with their acute mentally ill relatives and friends. They are not alone, because assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill is here for you, and we care about you, and we definitely understand what you are going through. My brother, Larry Neal, N-E-A-L, was a severe mentally ill patient. He spent 20 years in a mental hospital, and when he was released, he spent another 20 years revolving in and out of jails, as well as in and out of Shelby County Jail and hospitals. So I am a person who understands thoroughly what it is that families with mentally ill loved ones endure. And finally, Larry Neal was arrested, and police denied having him in custody while they kept him secretly incarcerated for 18 days and killed him. And they will not release records regarding how he died. So cover-ups of deaths of people in custody are very common in America. And, of course, that is against the U.S. Constitution and against the International Declaration of Human Rights to have secret arrests and secret deaths. But they happen from time to time to people who were mentally ill and who especially were killed without cause. So the short link for this program to share it is http://tobtr.com/s/7238543. You can also recover the link to this show by simply going to Blog Talk Radio and looking at the show for January 3rd at Human Rights Demand Channel and just capturing the link from the search field at the top of the page, and share this link and share other links regarding assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill with your social networks so that more people will know that we are taking the USA to international court for restitution for families or mentally ill people themselves and their victims who may have been robbed, raped, or killed because someone was denied treatment for their mental illness. And again, I want to thank you for joining us today. Happy New Year to each and every one of you. The telephone number here is 347-857-3293. That, again, is the phone number for this broadcast today and tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. My email address, once again, is maryloves, L-O-V-E-S, justice@gmail.com. And I believe that we can do better. And if we work together, then we will do better for our mentally disturbed relatives and friends who are oftentimes quite able to make it in society as long as they get treatment. They would be able to stay out of the circumstances that we're talking about today. They would be able to be wholesome members of society because they get the treatment that they need. I played for you a song by Nina Simone, who was a great musician during the 60s, and she suffered from mental illness. But she took her medication every day, and she was able to survive without going, as far as I know, to a mental hospital. She was able to survive and do well. And so could you. So could your loved one survive and do well as long as they are treated for their mental illness. I want you to know that mental illness is not so odd, is not at all rare. In fact, it's been determined that 1 out of 5 Americans has a mental illness, not necessarily a severe case of mental illness, but a great number of people, including police officers, have mental illness. I want to read you a short list of people who suffer from these mental illnesses: bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, manic depression, Alzheimer's, dementia, PTSD, postpartum depression, autism. These are physical or mental conditions that have to do with the brain. Some of these individuals who suffer or who did suffer from mental illness include Buzz Aldrin, an astronaut, Adam Ant, a musician, Beethoven, a composer, Napoleon Bonaparte, a political leader, Tim Burton, an artist and director, Lloyd Barron, a poet, Dick Cabot, a television journalist, Winston Churchill, a great politician, Charles Dickens, an author, Robert Downey Jr., an actor, Richard E. Dreyfuss, an actor, Patty Duke, an actress, Ralph Waldo Emerson, an author, Carrie Fisher, an actress and writer, Larry Flint, a publisher and activist, Francis Scott Key Fitzgerald, a writer, Connie Francis, a singer, Stephen Fry, an actor, comedian, and writer, Peter Gabriel, a musician, Alan Garner, a novelist, Matthew Good, a musician, Philip Graham, a publisher, a businessman, Macy Gray, a musician, an actor, Graham Greene, an English novelist, Sean LeBert, a singer, Patrick Kennedy, a former congressman, Elvis Presley, a great singer and actor, Britney Spears, a singer, and of course there are so many more who have suffered from mental illness or who currently battle that condition. And in addition to these famous people, someone that you love might also have that same condition. And we invite you to join us at Amy versus USA, or just join in the advocacy for such people here at Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We believe that there is no reason for mental illness to be terminal, and too often that is the case in the United States of America. So thank you again for joining us today. God bless you, and have a happy first week of this brand new year. You know, this is a new year and a new opportunity to get involved in lifting up your fellow man. Make this place, this world, a better place if you can. God bless you. And we'll hear again from Nina Simone, who says, "I wish that I knew what it's like to be free." Not everyone with severe mental illness can be free, because we have some individuals who do not respond well to treatment and medication, and who are a danger to themselves and others, and remain a danger to themselves and others if they were completely free. So therefore, that is why we need long-term mental hospitalization, and we need to remove the law that says Medicaid cannot be used for long-term mental hospitalization. Medicaid cannot be used for inpatients in mental hospitals. We need to remove that exclusion so that mental hospitals can replace incarceration for people who do need to be inpatients. It is, as I said, less expensive to treat mental illness than it is to have this really huge and very abusive prison system and put our mentally ill people in it. It makes it overcrowded, and it makes it much more dangerous than it should be for inmates who don't have mental illness, just as it's dangerous for inmates who do have mental illness. And the same is the case for society. We have a large society here in America. Over 350 million people live here, and a great many of them have acute mental illness, and it creates a danger to our communities for people who have severe mental illness to be refused treatment until they already prove through crime to be a danger to self and others. That is absolutely reckless on the part of our government authorities to have such a rule in place that nobody can get treatment until they prove to be dangerous to self and others. We need something to help people who are threatening violence. We need something to help people who are acting like they are out of control mentally. And so thank God for everyone who agrees and who will work together for this cause. And we appreciate you joining us on Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. This has been the AMI versus USA Claimants Meeting. And here is Nina Simone.
No.